This episode is brought to you by R1 RCM, a leading provider of technology-driven solutions that transform the financial performance of hospitals, health systems, and medical groups. R1 delivers proven, scalable operating models that power sustainable improvements to net patient revenue while reducing operating costs. To learn how you can build a future-ready revenue cycle today, visit us at www.r1rcm.com/Beckers.
Hello and welcome to the Beckers Hospital Review podcast. My name is Will Riley with R1 RCM. With me today is Trevor Wright. Trevor is the Chief Executive Officer of Loma Linda University Health Hospitals. Welcome to the podcast, Trevor.
Well, thanks so much for having me today.
It's great to have you with us. Please start by introducing us to you and your health system.
Yes. Well, thanks. As you said, I'm Trevor Wright. I serve as the CEO for Loma Linda University Health Hospitals. We are a 6-hospital system, academic health system in Southern California, right across the road from San Bernardino. We $2.5 billion net revenue, about 2 million outpatients a year, 57,000 inpatients, and 14,000 employees.
Wonderful. And what's your background in healthcare, Trevor?
I started actually in human resources, and then I added human resources plus operations, became COO, and then was actually, I was COO of Loma Linda University Health, and then was asked to be the CEO when a transition happened.
Wonderful. So. Thank you. I'm looking forward to talking to you today about some of the big issues facing healthcare leaders as we head into 2024. Let's start with a nice, easy one. Payer relations.
Oh, super easy. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for starting easy.
Yeah, totally. So we know that payer and provider relations have always been complex, right? But what seems to have changed a little bit over the last couple of years, probably post-pandemic, is that there seems to be an element of contention and challenge in that relationship that perhaps wasn't there before.
Yes.
Do you see that? And how's that playing out at Loma Linda?
Yeah, we certainly see that. California is a very highly penetrated managed care market, always has been. I think the integration and consolidation, frankly, in the payer environment has led to additional and outsized leverage. Being a part, it's changed the dynamic a little bit. And so payer relations have always been complex, as you said, and you've always tried to strike a balance and arrive at the common balance point. What it feels more like now is that the leverage is on the payer side, and so there's not a lot of interest. I can go on, and I don't want to because we want to get to the other questions, but the operating model of kind of deny and then fight over claims and payment for those seems to have accelerated with the payers, and that's particularly challenging. We're a safety net hospital. 76 of our patients are government funded, Medicare or Medicaid. In California, we call it Medi-Cal, but 85% of those are in the managed environment. So it's a really challenging place to be.
Why has it become the modus operandi for this interaction?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a philosophical question. And I mean, in the managed environment, the money is there and the payers have it and then distribute it to the people who are providing care, right? Doctors and hospitals, which really support the places that patient gets care. What the challenge it seems like, when you want to hang on to as much of that money as you can, it seems the dynamic has been lost, I think, from consumers and patient, frankly. And I've said this a lot, is that we've lost sight, I think, of what's really kind of important. And what I think is important is really trying to help fund and deliver patient care. And so we've always had this compact, how we've cobbled together the payment system in this country, is that government funding, even before inflationary environment, never quite covered the whole cost of care, and commercial payers would help make up that gap. That dynamic seems to have changed as payers have consolidated. And frankly, as costs have gone up, the government funding has even gotten slower. So that gap's gotten wider. Mm-hmm. And now we're all arguing about a case of who's going to make up the shortfall.
Right. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about some of the knock-on effects of that relationship, right? Because we've seen in our data a significant increase in denials over the last couple of years. You mentioned it already. We've seen a slowdown in payments. You mentioned that already. as well. What does that mean for a health system like Loma Linda from an administrative and a clinical perspective?
Yeah, you know, we, safety net hospitals are always like right on the razor's edge, right? In terms of operating sustainability, et cetera. And we're no different. You have to be really good at operational efficiency and blocking and tackling. And in fact, we take pride in being the lowest cost per adjusted discharge. When you adjust for CMI and wage index, we're the lowest cost per discharge academic health system in California. And so it's those, so you have to have that. But what it means is when you don't have, when you're having to spend money and resources, time and energy on trying to argue, and you'd expect this from the hospital CEO's perspective, about being paid for care that you delivered and being told, sorry, we're not going to pay for that for some, frankly, what seems like just a arbitrary administrative denial. You're spending a lot of resources to try and get what you feel is already just payment. I don't think it does good for the country, frankly, to be spending time and resources on the payer side and the hospital side arguing about things that should have already been contractually defined. So I think it adds to the overall expense. And I think that's problematic. I've said there's enough money running around in healthcare. We just got it hung up in the wrong places. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the dialogue we've got to, I think, in this industry and as a country, figure out how should it be distributed? I mean, what are the rules that we should operate by?
People say that technology can help with some of this problem, but it doesn't seem quite that straightforward.
It doesn't. I mean, the real question is, okay, so let's, because we got, everybody talks, I mean, AI, right, is the hot buzzword. Payers will have it, we'll have it. So are we going to be in the same model? We're just going to let then the machines argue it out in the back rooms.
Right.
You know, but right now we invest a whole bunch of people. Now we're going to invest technology and resources in that same thing. They're still arguing about it, right? You just added another layer to it.
Thing to manage.
Yeah, right.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the regulatory environment if we can. So you, like all large health systems, work in a patchwork environment there, lots of local regulations, some federal regulations, and probably some inconsistency there. I'm curious about how you see that environment. What's the outlook for that environment in 2024? Election fever's ramping up, the rhetoric's getting louder. What's on the horizon?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. And you know, unfortunately, I don't have the crystal ball that says here's exactly what it's going to be. If you look at what the trajectory has been, at least from my perspective, regulations are always well-intended, but they inevitably produce unintended consequences, right? And so it's kind of hard to, I think, regulate or legislate good practice and good policy. So it appears that while well-intentioned, the regulatory environment will probably continue to escalate. I think there's a lot of rhetoric and dialogue about where the problem is in cost and health care delivery. Hospitals have kind of been positioned unfairly, in my estimation, as one of the big drivers of that. But if you look at the continuum of what it takes to deliver healthcare, medical device manufacturers, pharmacy, like we're the end of the chain, right? And so, but what happens in the regulatory environment is that there's, I think, because it's been positioned as here's kind of what our challenge is in healthcare, we'll get better outcomes and we can lower the cost if we increase regulation, which frankly, oftentimes produces the opposite effect because you have to introduce additional resources and support to try and comply with those things while well-intentioned aren't really adding to the overall value and the cost and the quality, frankly, in the delivery of the healthcare.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about then delivery of healthcare where it matters, the patient. We know that patient expectations for their healthcare experience have changed a lot over the last 10 years, let's say. We use technology more in our daily lives than we used to. We probably just bring different expectations just from societal changes as well. How are you seeing those expectation shifts play out in your patient population?
It's actually one of the things I'm excited about. I mean, frankly, in healthcare, we have not done really a good job at all as an industry, in my estimation. We measure patient experience on the inpatient side. And if you go to the clinic, right? Mm. But that's not even really what the patient experience
staying
is.
Staying in the hospital.
Right.
Right.
The patient experience is how easy, in my estimation, how easy is it for me to access healthcare, to schedule it, and to pay for it, right? If you kind of break it down in its most simplest form, billing in healthcare, I mean, no one really understands it. And for as much as we tell ourselves, oh, we're simplifying the billing, we really haven't done a good job. So there's a long, long road to go the thing that I'm excited about is I do think technology can help us here. I think we need some help on the regulatory side too, the Medicare cost report and that, using that as the, here's the reason why billing is complicated, et cetera. I think we need to, as an industry, move to where people are easy, have an easier time accessing healthcare in the way we're used to accessing everything, right? Everybody talks about phone access, but we haven't really been serious about it. I'm talking about for my system. I'm pushing hard in this area. And the same thing for paying for healthcare. Like, how do we make it a less friction environment? And I think we've done, in my estimation, a lot of things around the edges. I think there are a few places that are really, you know, putting some heavy investment and resources into it. In a safety net system, it's really difficult. That's where you come to the resource question, right? Mm-hmm. I have ideas about what I think we should do, but it requires investment. And I think that partnership in that area is the key to success in going forward. But our mantra, I believe, should be making it a lower friction environment for people that are trying to access and pay for the care.
And your workforce has to adapt as well, right? Because as you introduce more technology to the patient, it's great, they like it, self-service, but it's still healthcare. It's still a high touch space.
Yeah.
So you have to bring your workforce along with that as well, I assume, and make sure that they're well equipped to deal with the patient in this new way.
I mean, it's such a great point that you make, because I think one of the reasons that we haven't made as much progress in that area as we probably could has been, let's be honest, some of healthcare has been oriented about it's the way the providers want it, not necessarily for the patient, right? So bringing the workforce along about this is the right thing to do. I mean, it's kind of putting the patient back at the center and say, no, yes, this will require you to change because it's about them, not necessarily you. It's kind of patient first, workforce second. And I don't mean that as maybe as pejorative as that sounds, but we do have to change some of that framework, because some of the resistance to change has been because on the provider side, we don't really want to change that much. It works for us, but it's not really working so great for the patient.
Let's end with a question about safety net strategies. You've mentioned it a couple of times, but just really keen to understand more about what you're doing as a health system to deliver care to vulnerable populations. Yeah. And what does your safety net strategy look like?
We've always been a safety net hospital. I already mentioned our payer mix. You have to be, so there's a few things. We have to be really good at efficiency. We've been on that journey since I've been at Loma Linda, you know, for 8 years, and I'm proud of what we've achieved in that space. So that's kind of the foundational. You can't take your eye off that ball. Mm-hmm. Where we're going in the future around this space for safety net, I think, is working. We've expanded our community health worker program. We started with 2 and we're now at 13. But for our community, understanding where they are and spending time in the bridge between hospital and healthcare and the resources available in the community, we're trying to help insert resources into that gap to help provide support in ways that don't just result in them coming up and through the emergency department. So our investment in community health workers is to try and help deliver care at a lower cost point and, frankly, an easier access point for the person, rather than just saying it's the only place I know how to get these kind of resources and help.
Right. Trevor, that's a great way to round out our conversation today. Thank you so much. We covered a lot of ground. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Will, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.